Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
With crowdfunding, it's a little bit different in the sense that it kind of flips the e-commerce model upside down. So instead of having to get inventory first, one of the biggest advantages that comes for why people are interested in crowdfunding is that crowdfunding allows you to launch without inventory. Really understanding why they're going to get into this is really going to shape kind of how they can take advantage of this model, because there's many different things that you can, many different goals that you can have when you're going into this. So the first is to understand what it is that pre-orders can do for you. What is it that you want to benefit from when it comes to exploring this model for yourself? The willingness to ask for help and the openness to ask for help and to find people that are going to be smarter than me, even at whatever stage you're at, to be able to ask for their support and be open and humble to receiving feedback. I think that's super important.
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by Vance Lee from Live My Playground. On today's episode, we are going to talk about all things e-commerce, as well as a very unique way to fund inventory through crowdfunding. This is an episode you are not going to want to miss. Welcome to the show, Vance.
Thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Absolutely. So let's get started with a little bit about your background and your path in the e-commerce world.
Cool. So I started e-commerce back in 2010, I would say, 2010, 2011. And back then, I didn't really know that it was e-commerce. I actually was working for a startup in Canada. It was a Groupon equivalent, but in Canada. So we were called Team Buy. And at the time, the idea was just to sell these daily deals. So like gym memberships, spa memberships, that type of thing. And at some point, this company realized that we could start selling products, and that's where everything started changing. So I helped them build their products division for the company. So we started selling mostly, sometimes they're good products, but a lot of times they're like the cheap Chinese products that were just like, that was brought by some type of weird supplier. And we would just feature a lot of these. And that's kind of like my entry point into e-commerce before knowing that it was kind of this e-commerce thing. And I did really well with this company. We worked it up to about 2 million in sales per month. It was just like this really crazy thing that was blowing up. And this is all through the audience that was just purchasing these daily deals. So eventually I left this company. It was kind of like an interesting experience, but I moved on and I started Amazon FBA in 2015. So that was my first entry into what we know nowadays as e-commerce. And yeah, so I started Amazon FBA, did really well in my first product launch. Didn't do so well in the next few product launches, a lot of failures. Maybe we can touch on that later if that's helpful. But eventually that led me to 2016, where there is a massive change in Amazon's terms of service. So at that time, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a time where it was okay to have honest and biased reviews way back. If this feels like another lifetime ago, but at that point, Amazon decided, okay, no more honest, unbiased reviews. So this was a crazy change at the time because we had no idea like how we're going to sell the inventory. We had a few products that were going to be coming in soon and a few that were manufacturing. So we were just starting to panic. So that's what led me to start exploring alternative different channels. So that's when I started launching a Shopify site. That's when I started exploring crowdfunding. And eventually that led me down this path of using crowdfunding to launch one of my next products. And it became this really interesting thing because it worked really well that we started using this to launch our products. And we had a lot of friends in the industry that were like, hey, what is this thing that you're doing? We've always heard about it, but we don't know much about it. And that's what allowed us to kind of get into Kickstarter and using Kickstarter as a tool to be able to supplement like a launch strategy. So this kind of became our path of being able to launch products and launch brands using this pre-order model that we call crowdfunding and Kickstarter. So that's what led me to where I am today, give or take.
Awesome. Now, before we dive into crowdfunding, which I'm really excited to talk about, you had mentioned a couple of failed product launches. And I, if you would be brave enough to share those, I would love to hear some stories, because to our listeners, if you're just getting started, this happens. We launched a couple products this year that were absolute duds, and it's a bummer, but it happens. And I think if you talk to any entrepreneur and they're being honest, they have some stories like this. So I'm curious, are there any that come to mind in terms of failed product launches?
Oh man. I mean, there's so many. Like, my first product luckily was a successful product. And because of this success, to be honest, I got a little bit overconfident. So that year, me and my partner decided, okay, our first product did really well in 2015. We're going to launch, like, we said something like 12 products. We had no idea. We didn't understand cash flow. We didn't understand a lot of the stuff that it would take to have these products be successful. So we went on this like crazy, like sourcing spree and just getting samples. Like I lived with him at a time. He was one of my best friends. We just had our living room that was full of boxes of samples from suppliers in China, these like weird looking boxes, Chinese writing, like all this crazy stuff. But that year we aimed to launch 12 products. And at the end of this, not all of them failed that year, but by the end of it, almost 10 of those products failed. So take your pick. There's a lot of fails. The one that I remember failed this took a little bit of time to fail, but this is a kitchen product. It was one of those, I forget what you call them. It's a splatter screen. So we actually sourced one of the best splatter screens. Like, it was like a premium splatter screen, so much better than everything else that was in that kind of category. But our biggest issue is we went into this and we didn't really understand what it would be to compete with the really big players. So these guys had like several thousand reviews, or some of them had 1,200 reviews, which could have competed with that at the time. But our biggest issue was just we didn't have cash flow, and we would order a round of maybe 1,000 or 1,500, and that was all the cash we had. And by the time we got in, did some giveaways, we started ranking, we ran out of inventory, and then the next cycle was just couldn't catch up. So this was a massive, this happened actually to several of our products because we tried to launch so many at the same time. So in hindsight, if we had understood more about cash flow and understood like what it was necessary to be able to scale a product, especially in those really competitive niches, then that would have really, it would have at least addressed like a few of these failures that were in that category. So that, along with a few other products in that same kind of time zone for us, mostly failed because we had issues with cash flow. Some of them failed for other reasons, but we weren't very educated at that point in time. So it was kind of embarrassing to think about this at the time, but it's just, you have to go through your, sometimes it's like you go through your growing pains of having this type of failure. Then now, okay, cash flow is a real thing. So that was one of the failures that I invested a lot of money in. That was probably like a $30,000-$40,000 like investment to try to get it up to that point. And it ended up failing because by the time we were able to get enough inventory, like the ranking tanked and all that stuff. So we had a huge challenge with that one product, but that took up a lot of capital.
Definitely. I'm sitting over here smiling because that story sounds very familiar to my early days where, you know, when you map things out, right, you never map out a product not selling. And so you tie up cash in, say, 10 products, and only two or three of them sell really well. And all the like forecasting that you've done doesn't play out. And so, and then you go out of stock. And so I would presume that those cash flow issues were what led you to crowdfunding. Is that
actually, that's not initially what led us to crowdfunding. It wasn't the biggest thing that led us to crowdfunding. This is one of the factors for sure. But the initial thing that led us to crowdfunding was this change in Amazon terms of service. And we weren't exactly sure how to launch this next product. So we didn't know what to do. This product was in the works. We had just placed the order and we wanted to understand like how we can launch this. And we didn't know how we're going to be successful on Amazon with those changes. And this is a common thing that happens often with Amazon just changing like a certain policy or changing a certain guideline. This has happened so many times over the years. I mean, 2015 seems like ages ago, but it wasn't that long ago. But since then, they've changed their policy so many times. And this has obviously put a big wrench in a lot of sellers' plans. So at that point, it was, okay, we have this issue. We want to launch this product, but we're not sure if we can launch it on Amazon because of this challenge. So yes, we have these cash flow issues. Yes, we have these. So the two other issues were, so the first one is not sure if we can launch this on Amazon and how. The second one was cash flow is becoming like a huge issue. And the third one was we were launching products in the same niche and in the same category. But even though we had successful products, launching the next product in that category didn't help us. It wasn't like people recognized that our company was launching a product number two or product four or five. It made no difference. It was like we were starting over every single time when we were launching a new product. So essentially we weren't really building like a brand, or we weren't building something recognizable for the customers, and we weren't building a real relationship with the customer. So we recognized that this was an issue because we never really we never got the advantages that somebody would get if they were actually building a brand and building a relationship with the customers that cared about that brand. So those are all kind of all the things that kind of pushed us towards Kickstarter. And that's pretty much it. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So to our listeners that maybe have heard the word crowdfunding, but are not exactly sure what it is or how it functions, can you tell us what it is?
Cool. Yeah. So that's a really good question. And I find that when I'm having conversations with people about this, it's not really clear what crowdfunding is in the context of e-commerce. Crowdfunding has been around probably for hundreds, maybe even thousands of years. The idea is that a crowd, so like multiple people, are going to come together to put some money into to fund a project or a product or whatever it might be. So this has been used in many different industries and many different situations. Maybe even your family can crowdfund your education or something like that. It's just like the idea is a lot of people are coming, or a few people are coming in to put together some funds to support whatever project is going to go live. So Kickstarter, they started to bring this to a lot of different ideas. Initially, Kickstarter brought this to creative projects, or anything from like music to like movie ideas or book publishing. And one of the categories of Kickstarter that actually now happens to be one of the biggest is products. So the idea was, if you have a cool concept for an idea or just something interesting that you wanted to launch and you didn't have the funds for it, you could put your project up on Kickstarter, tell people, hey, this is what I'm looking to do. This is what I'm looking to launch. This is what I'm going to produce if I had the funds. And people that love the idea would just pitch in some money and support the project to support it to launch. So that was how it originally started with Kickstarter. But nowadays, crowdfunding has become a little bit more, it's a little bit less about supporting projects that don't have funding, but it's now it's more used as kind of like a pre-order launch model. So people are coming they could be new startups with a cool concept, but no funds. But often now people are coming in with their actual companies. They might have funding, or they might have a lot of revenue already, but they come to crowdfunding as a way to get some support for launching a product. So it helps their cash flow. It helps build their brand. And it becomes this interesting way to get people involved in the process of you launching a product, which helps for really kind of the longevity of your brand. That is something that really, it's not so possible with the existing kind of launch strategies, especially like with Amazon currently.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk through the dynamics, how it works. So say I'm launching a sleeping bag made out of recycled materials. Okay.
Okay.
And I want to sell that for $100, and I don't have the cash to, I get some samples. I've got a really good prototype. At this stage, I'm very optimistic, but the first order is say $50,000, and I don't have that $50,000. How does the crowdfunding work there?
This is a really good question. So let's get down to details. So the first thing I'll say is, let's say you did have the $50,000. So what would you do in this situation? You develop the product and you'd put this $50,000 into ordering your inventory. If you're selling on Amazon, you get the inventory, get into Amazon warehouses, then your listing goes live. You do whatever giveaway or to launch strategy you use. And then eventually you hope that you rank. And you hope that if you rank, you start making up for the costs you had incurred in the launch strategy and all the sunk costs you had in developing the product. So this is the standard launch approach. So with crowdfunding, it's a little bit different in the sense that it kind of flips the e-commerce model upside down. So instead of having to get inventory first, one of the biggest advantages that comes for why people are interested in crowdfunding is that crowdfunding allows you to launch without inventory. So to answer your question, what you would do after you develop the prototype and you have something that's interesting to show, and like you physically have the product, you need two main things to launch for crowdfunding. So the first thing you need is a prototype. So you need something that shows that the product works. So that's number one. And number two is you need a campaign page. So this is where you show the audience what it is that you're working on, the product or project that you're looking to launch. So the campaign page is equivalent to the assets that you would create for your product, your Amazon product listing page, or if you have a Shopify store, it'd be your product page on your Shopify store. So essentially what you're doing is you're creating a pre-order sale page where you're showing people what it is that they're going to get. And when they see this, if they like it, then they're purchasing it. So you put up this campaign. This campaign is up to 60 days. We can talk about what ideal timeframes there are when it comes to setting that up. But up to 60 days, so 1 day to 60 days. And at the end of the 60 days, if you hit your goal, so let's say you set your goal to $25,000 or $50,000. Once you hit your goal, you essentially are able to, you have a successful project. So what happens then is Kickstarter, once the campaign closes, let's say day 60, Kickstarter waits 15 days and they give you the funds. So let's say instead of raising 50, you raised like 100K, 125K, because people really loved it. They shared it a lot. They got really excited about the sleeping bag. So 125K at the end of the campaign, your campaign is successful. 15 days later, the 125K gets deposited directly into your bank account. And then from there, you place the order. You can order 50K this time, but if you know that you want a little bit extra, you can sell it. You can order maybe 70 or 80K. And at that point, once you get the inventory, then you can fulfill that to your customers. So essentially, it really does flip the e-commerce model upside down as we know it, because really, all we've done in the past is we need to order inventory so that we can use the inventory to sell, because you can't technically sell a product without inventory, right? But Kickstarter is what allows you to do that. So it's a really interesting model.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
Very nice. Very nice. Sorry to interrupt the episode. You may have heard Ken and I talking recently about a new tool that we're using for Amazon refunds. Now, I have used other refund tools like this. However, I can tell you in the first 7 days, they scrubbed the back end of my Amazon account going back 18 months and found $5,000 of refunds. And the nice thing about this is, it's my money. Amazon made a mistake and they are just auditing my account. The other thing I really like about this tool is there is no monthly fee. They only charge a commission if they are successful in getting you your money. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM for Firing the Man, FTM400. This is an awesome tool. Can't say enough good things about it. Now, back to the episode. Now, to dig a little bit more into these numbers, and going back to our sleeping bag example, you need $50,000. Your cost on it is $50. So you need to sell 1,000 units to hit your mark. What happens if you don't? What happens if you don't hit 1,000 units?
If you don't hit your goal, so you have to set a campaign goal. So usually we recommend setting this campaign goal that's lower than what you actually need. So usually it's in the range of like 10,000 to 30,000, something like that. And really, as long as you think that you can execute the project and you can afford to place your order otherwise, you're not in a worse spot. But if you don't hit your funding goal, then you don't actually get any of the money at all on Kickstarter. There's another platform called Indiegogo, which maybe you've heard of. And that's also another crowdfunding platform. On that platform, if you choose to launch there, even if you partially hit your goal, you can get the funds. But when it comes to preparing for the campaign, we want to make sure that when you launch, you're going to hit your goal. It's not going to be like, let's hope that it happens. You can prepare. There's a lot of work that you can do in advance so that you can make sure that you are going to be successful in hitting your goal.
Okay. And Kickstarter needs to make money by facilitating this. So can we talk about fees or how does that work?
Yeah, so Kickstarter takes the total fee from payment processors and Kickstarter works out to be 8%.
Wow, that is so my accounting brain is like going off right now. And here's what I really like about this is a traditional product launch. You place your order, cash goes out the door. You are holding that risk whether this sells or not. And through this model, you kind of transfer risk and you also can kick the tires on, is this a good idea or not? If your Kickstarter campaign doesn't take off, maybe it's not a good idea. Maybe only you think it's a good idea. So you're building an audience before. And when you look at fulfillment fees on Amazon in particular, we always bank on about a third of our, and now some of that's fulfillment, but about a third of our fees, or excuse me, a third of our purchase price is Amazon fees. And so the 8%, that seems reasonable for what they're doing. So anyway, let's talk about the types of products. And the first time I heard about crowdfunding, I'm a beekeeper and I love beekeeping. And the fans of this show are probably sick of me talking about beekeeping. But here we go again. So traditionally to harvest honey, you need to go into the beehives. You need to take out the frames and bring them back somewhere. And then you take a really hot knife and you cut off some wax and then you put it in this giant drum and you spin it around and that's how you get your honey. It's very labor intensive. The bees get very pissed off when you do that. and it's messy. I mean, honey gets everywhere. Most beekeepers have like a honey room. That's just a room that's sticky. And so the first time I heard about this was a product called the Flow Hive, which is, think of like a beer tap that sits on the back of a hive. You don't need to bother your bees. You simply walk up to the back of your beehive, pull a handle, and honey comes out like it's on tap. Brilliant. And you hear a lot of our audience members say, I want to start a company, but I don't have an idea or an invention. And when I hear that, I often think that most companies that launch on Amazon don't have a patent. They don't have a unique idea. They're just taking, you know, making improvements on something that's existing and selling it. And I'll use an example. I've got a Hydro Flask here. It's a great water bottle. Hydro Flask did not invent water bottles. They just came out with a really solid product. People like it and people buy it. And so when we're talking about like market fit for products, is this more on the inventive, new, innovative type of product side of things, or kind of in contrast, the improvements to an existing type of product?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think when Kickstarter originally started, this platform was more for like really cool. I mean, there's a lot of really cool, interesting products that I think Oculus launched on Kickstarter, Pebble Watch, if you remember that one. All these interesting products that were actually at the time like super innovative, and they launched on Kickstarter as kind of this platform where they really needed that funding. So that's how it originally started. So I can see a lot of people having that perception that Kickstarter is about innovative products. Nowadays, really just anything goes. I mean, lots of improvements on existing products, lots of repositioning of existing products that are useful for another niche, but presented and modified a little bit for a different niche, things like that. All those types of categories work. So to give you some examples, I mean, when I first started on Amazon, I was looking for categories to sell in. So I know the kitchen category really well, and I know the travel category really well. I know I've seen dozens and dozens of travel products that have launched on Kickstarter, like travel packing cubes or like luggage organizers and things like that, were just like very standard categories on Amazon. When they launched and did a good job of presenting it, they've done really well on Kickstarter. In the kitchen category, I've seen, I mean, this is not a cocktail shaker, but cocktail shakers, that was one of the categories I was interested in. Just like a nice looking cocktail shaker has done like, I remember like 470,000 on Kickstarter when they first launched. Lots, I mean, there's both. But I would say like when it comes to products that are launching nowadays, over 90 to 95% of them fall into the category of just like improvements, as you called it, where it's completely innovative and completely brand new things like that beekeeping idea or the beer or the bee pump, I guess.
Yeah, the Flow Hive. Yep. The flow hive.
Cool. That is probably something that's maybe never existed before. So that would probably account for like less than 5% of the project that are launched nowadays.
Very interesting. And I think that is something that holds a lot of people back from starting a business is I don't have an idea. And if I look at the categories of products that we sell, we don't have a single patent on any of them. We have taken existing ideas and made improvements on them. And that is kind of how things work. So if somebody's interested in this, what would you say a good step one is?
It's to understand why you would be interested in this. So there's different objectives for people wanting to come and explore crowdfunding. Often it's because they don't have enough cash. So like the objective might be to get some funding so that they can place their first order. Or maybe they already have a successful business with dozens of products launched or a few products launched, and now they're ready to take their brand to the next level. They want to use this as a way to build fans and build a community and build a list so that they can start scaling this brand more effectively. Maybe it's about cash flow. Maybe they want to explore this as a different tool to allow them to improve their cash and their cash flow situation so that they can scale their business faster in the way that we discussed earlier. But really understanding why they're going to get into this is really going to shape kind of how they can take advantage of this model, because there's many different goals that you can have when you're going into this. So the first is to understand what it is that pre-orders can do for you. What is it that you want to benefit from when it comes to exploring this model for yourself?
Okay.
And so once you have that, you have an idea of what it is that you want to take advantage of this for, then the next is to start exploring a product niche or product category. Maybe you already have a product or like a product that you've been stewing on for years and you haven't moved on. Kickstarter is actually really great for this. And you mentioned this earlier about product validation, because product validation is pretty key. With Amazon, a lot of the products that we launch are based on existing keyword research data. So lots of people are searching for phone cases or water bottles or cocktail shakers or packing cubes or whatever it is. So you know that somebody's going to buy it. But if you're going to create something that's a little bit different, that isn't necessarily in with search terms that's already being searched on Amazon to be like a necessarily like a crazy successful product, then this is an opportunity for you to use this as a way to validate. So a little bit of an aside, we'll come back to the original question, which was, what is it that we can do at this stage? So if you have a product niche or product category that you're interested in, you can start exploring those types of products in there that you might be curious about launching. So if you already have a coffee brand or like a travel brand, you can start looking at within that category, what types of products can make sense to launch that would be complementary to your brand, that would be interesting to you, that if you launched it, you would feel excited about launching that product. If you haven't launched a product yet, or you don't have a category, it might just be to start getting inspiration for some ideas that you either yourself or in exploring other options that are in niches that you're interested in. So coming up with a product concept is going to be your first step. And most of the people that usually explore crowdfunding, they come with a product concept, or at least the niche that they want to work in. So it becomes really easy, because at that point, it's just a matter of exploring what it is that you want to do, what is it that you want to create, or what type of impact you want to have in that niche, so that you can start working towards coming up with that product concept.
Okay. I always try to think about, what are my risks? What's my exposure here? And so can we touch on that a little bit? What's the worst case scenario look like if you were to try some crowdfunding?
Yeah. So this is a really good question, because often people think that coming into crowdfunding, it's a different type of thing that you would normally do when you're doing a crowdfunding or an e-commerce launch. So any type of e-commerce launch. And when in fact, it's actually not true, because with crowdfunding, you're doing everything that you would normally do for your regular Amazon launch or your Shopify launch, with the exception of not having the inventory risk. So what I mean by that is, if you're going to launch on Amazon, you're going to take photos. You're going to create some cool videos. Some people would argue, no, you don't have to make videos for Amazon, but I would argue now that you should be making some high quality video content and stuff that's going to allow you to market and create video ads and that type of thing. And you'll want to have good copy. So all these types of things that you use to prepare yourself to launch on Amazon are the things that you will need to launch on Kickstarter. And so in being prepared for a regular launch, you are prepared for a Kickstarter launch. The one thing that I'll kind of put in as a disclaimer here is that generally with Kickstarter, you want to invest in higher quality assets. So if you're going to hire your girlfriend's cousin to take your Amazon photos, you might want to hire somebody that's a little bit better to take your Kickstarter photos and your media assets, because you're investing in making sure that you're creating something that people are going to take a look at and, wow, this is like impressive. I want to support them. I want to be a part of this project. So you want to invest in higher quality assets. So in this sense, you're going to there's a high likelihood that depends on what your standards for quality for Amazon are, but you'll likely want to invest in slightly higher quality assets for your Kickstarter launch. So in terms of risk, it doesn't have any disadvantages compared to any type of traditional e-commerce launch, but it has the advantage of not having to fund the inventory first. So you put out the campaign page, which is your product listing page on Amazon, and say, hey, here it is. Would you like to support it? So that's all you need. So you need we talked about this earlier, you need the prototype, which you'll need for any other launch anyways, because you would have to go through develop the product. And then you need all the assets that you put on the campaign page, which is all the assets you'll need for your Amazon or Shopify launch.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that. And this seems good photography, good keyword research, good video. Those are all like good hygiene. If you're planning on launching on Amazon anyway, I think that's just overall things that you're already going to be doing. And so I would kind of liken this to, say you're on Amazon and you want to expand to Etsy. You already have images, you already have copy, you already have keyword research, and that work is kind of done. So I really like that. Now I want to turn the corner and talk about Live My Playground a lot. And to kind of introduce this topic, when I first got started in business, I would typically try something out for the first time, fall flat on my face, and then realize that I needed to bring in some professional help to assist with it. And we have gotten to the point where when we're embarking on a new endeavor, typically the first question that we ask is, who are the professionals in this space? And so can you talk about Live My Playground and some of the services you offer?
Yeah. So Live My Playground is our website, livemyplayground.com. We call ourselves Playground Theory. And what we do is we originally actually started this business, not as a business. It was just us helping our friends in the industry. So people were just asking us questions about crowdfunding. They wanted to know what to do, how to build a brand, how to create cool assets. And it was just us helping people. Eventually this evolved into Playground Theory, where we were doing a little bit of agency work. We were doing consulting for people that wanted to launch brands and use crowdfunding and the pre-order model to launch their new products or new product concepts. And eventually that's what led to our current situation. So we don't really do agency work anymore. We found that it was a little bit limiting in terms of how many projects we could take on at a time. And it wasn't allowing us to kind of scale our efforts. So at this point, what we've launched is we've launched a coaching program. We call it an accelerated program. It's called the Lab. So the Launch Accelerated Blueprint. And this has taken the strategies that we've used to develop all of our campaigns, our launches. And really we've raised over $7 million in successful launches. So these are launches. These are not like e-commerce performances afterwards. It's just like the launches themselves. So we've taken that, we've incorporated this into our Launch Accelerated Blueprint Lab program. And that's what we're offering as a coaching program now for anybody that is wanting to explore launching their next product or growing their brand with expanding their product line through the use of pre-orders and crowdfunding.
Awesome. We will post links to all that in the show notes. And I would encourage our audience, if this sounds like something you'd be interested in, I would get in touch with Vance. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago is when we first met each other. And I have to say, I left that meeting just energized and excited about this new method of funding inventory. I mean, that I would say that is, we're an existing company, but we run into the same issues that a lot of other companies run into, where we would love to double in size, but with a 15 or 20% profit margin, it is challenging. And so you look to external capital sources to do that. And I think this is definitely something that would be an awesome market fit for some of the ideas that we have internally. So definitely looking forward to staying in touch with you.
Sure. Yeah. And I should mention at this point, some people actually get confused with crowdfunding and they think that there's some type of equity involved or anything that involves owning the portion of the company that you put out based on your project. This is not the case. Really, there's just essentially the customers are putting down money for the pre-order. They don't own any part of your company. So it's not like equity funding, even though it's just as good as getting cash in advance for whatever it is that you need for that stage of your business. And you can do anything you want with this money. So if you get this fund, let's say you raise $125,000 in our example, you have this, you might decide to allocate 50 or more to your first initial order. Whatever it is that you want to do with the extra left over, it's really up to you. You can use that in your business. You can use that to launch another product. You can do whatever you want with it. This is your money now. So as long as you deliver the products to the customers that you promise, the cash is yours and you get to do whatever you want with it. There's nobody saying, hey, you have to spend it in this way. So it's actually really flexible in terms of what you can do and how this can contribute to scaling your business, especially if you have an existing brand or you have 5 or 6 products or 10, 15 products and you're ready to start scaling. We're finding that a lot of brands will use this as a way to start building their audiences and then using this as a way to get the cash flow and the cash advance to kind of be ahead on cash flow so that they can use this as a way to grow their business and scale their business rather than always being, like you said, with 15, 20% margins, always falling behind the next order and always feeling like you're playing catch up with what's going to happen next to be able to grow your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been a wonderful conversation. Anything else we want to talk about before we get to the fire round?
I don't think so. I think you've done a pretty good job of capturing this concept, and maybe we can do round two if that's necessary to kind of dive into some of these other concepts.
Absolutely. I would definitely, let's plan on that. I'd look forward to it. So, all right, fire round. What is your favorite book?
One of my favorite books, it's not a business book, but one of my favorite books is called The Way of the Superior Man. And it talks about masculinity and how to work with some of these things that allow you to become a man of purpose, contribution, integrity. And it's made a big difference in my life and the way I do work, in my relationships, like in my, with my family and all aspects of my life. So really powerful book. If you're into personal development, this is a crazy book. I love that book.
Awesome. Oh, I'm going to add that one to my reading list. What are your hobbies?
I'm really into nerding out about health. So challenging my body in different ways. So I meditate a lot. I do this weird thing called ice baths. So essentially just jump into a bucket of ice and sit there for 15 minutes. And so all of this interesting like biohacking stuff or stuff that makes me challenge my body and improve my body. I'm very much into that and reading and fitness. So that's what I like to do in my free time.
Very nice. And the last question, what do you think sets apart successful e-commerce entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
That's a really good question. There's so many ways to take this, but I think I'll kind of take this from two perspectives. I think the first thing is the willingness to ask for help and the openness to ask for help and to find people that are going to be smarter than me, even at whatever stage you're at, to be able to ask for their support and be open and humble to receiving feedback. I think that's super important, because for me, I didn't really start asking for help until my second and a half, like third year of business, where I started finding people that were like in this, in e-commerce, in the similar communities, where I started talking to them about different challenges I was having. And that was really what allowed my business to go to that next level, is being able to ask for help, pay for help if you need it, or find mentors if you need it, whatever it is that gets you access to help, and being open and humble to it, and be open to being stupid. But sometimes you're going to ask a question and it's a stupid question. It's okay. You have the right to have a stupid question if you need to learn, because if you don't ask that stupid question, you'll never learn it. So I think that's one way to look at it. And the other way to look at this is, I think, just being open-minded to new ideas, because I think we often have, we have a bias where the first thing that's presented to us is going to be the thing that sticks as a, either as a concept or a strategy or an approach. And once we get stuck to that, we have these blinders on that stop us from being open to new perspectives, new ideas, or somebody that says something that is an interesting concept or a new idea. And they're like, no, it's not this thing that I know. And I think, especially with how quickly digital marketing and e-commerce is evolving, to be able to not only, you know, learn, but also be open to challenging it with a critical perspective and say, okay, this is what a lot of people are telling me, but is this the right approach? And just having this type of critical thinking, critical analysis type of approach to be able to ask questions and be open-minded to something completely different than you've expected. That's what allowed us to stumble upon crowdfunding years ago. And that's what has allowed a lot of people to find alternative. Even now, like, I'm learning new strategies on how to launch new products with different types of influencers and things that I didn't know about 6 months ago. So if I was to be super stubborn about my ideas and how I thought this is going to work to be able to scale this brand, then I probably wouldn't be able to have all these interesting ways to explore that's going to be more effective, or maybe equally effective, whatever it might be. But just being open-minded to challenging what you know is going to be super important.
Very nice. Those are two awesome answers, and I like both of them. So, Vance, thank you so much for being a guest on the Firing Demand podcast. And to all the listeners, if you're interested in crowdfunding and learning more, check out the show notes. We'll be posting links to everything. And Vance, looking forward to part two of this episode.
Let's do it, man. I'm excited. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, hope we were able to dive into these topics and give your audience a little bit of knowledge about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to today's Firing the Man podcast. If you like this episode, head on over to firingtheman.com and check out our resource library for exclusive Firing the Man discounts on popular e-commerce subscription services. That is firingtheman.com/resource. You can also find a comprehensive library of over 50 books that Ken and I have read in the last few years that have made a meaningful impact on our business. For that, head on over to www.firingtheman.com/library. Lastly, check us out on social media at Firing the Man and on YouTube at Firing the Man for exclusive content. This is David Schomer
and Ken Wilson.
We're out. Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?